This is Seth Rodney. I'm speaking to you from Newburgh, New York, where I live. This is my note for the American Age podcast. It's Sunday, August 21st, and what came out of our conversation on the last podcast, regarding my position, I suppose, of not being a fan of the United States of America. Part of me wants to take the next few minutes to talk about why I'm not a fan, but I think listeners to the podcast will likely be familiar with the reasons I've listed over the years. Maybe I could summarize all of my reservations about this country by just using the example of the Declaration of Independence. And there's a way in which there's a degree of there's some high, very high flying rhetoric about what the United States holds forth for its citizens and for people around the world as a kind of beacon of egalitarian democracy and a recognition of the universal rights of people. You know, the preamble to the Declaration of Independence says, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. And among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." And you know, the majority of the history of this nation is really a bunch of people who are not white European men trying to hold this declaration, trying to hold on to the promise in this declaration, trying to manifest that promise, and being frustrated, being stymied. We had a civil war, and then we had a period known as Reconstruction. And that was a period when it seemed like that promise could be made true, could be made manifest. And black men were elected as senators in the South, and congressmen, and there began to be real, substantial legal changes to the status of black people. And then that was all rolled back by the Jim Crow South for how many years? I'm not a very good historian, but many, many decades until we had the Civil Rights Movement. And now I feel like we're in the midst of another wave of trying to roll back the advances that were made during that movement with the current Supreme Court and with the panic around the potential teaching of critical race theory. Anyway, I don't think I'm doing a very good job of explaining my reticence about being a sort of full-throated, I don't know, cheerleader for the United States. I'm not, though. I guess I want to say that what I am instead is perhaps just a clear-eyed observer. I think that's the position I've carved out for myself in the art scene as a critic, too. It's like, I am occasionally a fan, I am, of certain artists, certain movements, but most often I'm just a disinterested in the true definition of the term, that is the state as having being in the state of not being influenced by personal involvement in something, impartial. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm not impartial. I'm certainly not neutral. I'm certainly not objective. Maybe detached is a better term for me. Yeah, just, you know, if the United States tomorrow began to actually live up to that promise in that preamble, I would be on board with telling everyone within the sound of my voice that this nation is a shining city on the hill. But it's not yet. It's just not. Yeah, I guess I never had faith in the federal bureaucracy because I've always thought that much of what sort of colors this culture and much of what makes this culture what it is a kind of selfishness, a kind of solipsistic me before everybody else attitude, a willingness to profit at the cost of other people's despair. A sense that some supreme being has actually designed the world in such a way and looked favorably upon people born in this country to make them dominant over the rest of the world. I just find that sort of suite of related ideas, ideologies, just kind of ridiculous. I know that there are quite a few people in the nation who don't believe in sort of American exceptionalism or pursuing profit at the cost of other people's happiness, but I think it's seeped into the culture enough that it's just kind of always there. It's just sort of built into our legal, medical, educational, cultural systems, and I don't know how to get rid of it. So that's why I'm not a fan. I guess I needed to say that. I guess just to hear myself say it. Thanks for listening, and hoping to see you next time. Hear from you at some point. Feel free to reach out to us and tell us whether you appreciate what we're saying. I'd like that. Until next time.
Hi, this is Stephen G. Fullwood, and this is my coda from last week's episode, Institutional Trust, Faith versus Naivete. I'm going to start by saying I want to believe in institutions, but more accurately, I do trust some institutions and government-run processes. Traffic lights, for example. When I went into the hospital last December complaining, or actually just feeling like I couldn't breathe and that my heart was going to explode, I canceled my plans for the day and I went to the emergency room. I didn't question the doctor's expertise or the nurse's requirement that I take, different, blood pressure tests and, take blood and whatnot. No, I trusted that they had the experience to do what needed to be done so I could, one, find out what was wrong with me, and two, figure out how to get better. I stayed overnight. It wasn't a great feeling at all. I expected to go home, but it was where they put me in the hospital that disturbed me, which was when you first received in the emergency room and that big Everyone's seen ER, so there's this big bustling room full of people with different ailments and doctors and nurses and people not on gurneys and whatnot. It was loud and there was a constant beep, beep, that sort of thing. Mind you, this is during COVID too. And so I remember laying in the gurney overnight all night thinking how uncomfortable I was. But at the same time, I was grateful that one, I had health insurance, and two, that I was in the care of people who had studied to do this work and I had been practicing this work. Let me go back. I did question my doctors and nurses, but it was just like asking them, what was this for? And is this, you know, what would my blood test indicate and that kind of stuff? But it wasn't that they didn't have the expertise to do it. And I believed in the institution itself, even though they were packed to the gills with people. And this wasn't COVID. It was during COVID, but it wasn't that. It was actually just a lot of people during that particular weekend. Like I said, it wasn't the embassy suites, but my needs were addressed and I left with the blood pressure medicine that I needed and some advice on taking better care of myself. Now, mind you, I knew I had high blood pressure years ago, but I was like, oh, I'm going to work out. I'm going to run. I'm going to eat better. I'm going to do this. But it looks like I'm predisposed to getting it. You know, it's not just a lifestyle. It's actually in my blood and my family and whatnot. What I like about the conversation we had last week was that it changed, it encouraged me to be a little more careful about how I frame my thoughts and concerns publicly about this or that belief, just because it might be expedient or predominant thought or experiences. And so this helps me, what American Age helps me to do is to really think through some ideas or to begin to think through some of those ideas and things that I have. Yes, as I grew up, I've always been aware of institutions, but as I mentioned, I grew up poor, black, queer, and there were just certain kinds of things that felt like they weren't within my reach. I had to fit, I had to be heterosexual, I had to be white, or I had to be someone who had a little bit of money to even assume that the things that these institutions were set up for me. And of course, it wasn't all institutions, but I remember just thinking, feeling hype, full of anxiety and feeling like I didn't belong. Later on, I came to understand that that was one of the conditions of growing up the way that I did. It didn't have to be that way, but that's what I developed over the years. I've been reading a book called Egress on Mourning, Melancholy, and Mark Fisher by Matt Colquhoun. And it's interesting sort of it's a biography with a memoir mixed in, but also a lot of theory about Mark Fisher, who was known under his alias as K-Punk. He was an English writer, music critic, political and cultural theorist, philosopher, and teacher based in the Department of Visual Cultures at Goldsmiths at the University of London. And he was a man whose work is helping me think through some things I feel about capitalism. His three books, Capitalist Realism, Ghost of My Life, and The Weird and the Eerie, are really engaging books around how we consider ourselves in the midst of something. He was a man who struggled with depression all of his life and had the wherewithal and the thinking that really helped me was to think that you're in a situation, you're never just by yourself. And you live in a culture. That culture affects the way you think and how you are in the world. And so even if you're going to get help and you're doing, self-help and you're improving this, improving that, without looking at the overall system, it feels like you're taking on too much. And so I pulled that to this conversation around institutions and what their responsibilities are to their constituency. There is something that boggles my mind around people's undying faith in institutions. I feel like what I see and what I've felt in working within an institution for a number of years in different institutions, as a matter of fact, largely public institutions like the Schomburg Center for Research in Black Culture or institutions like the New York University, which is where I'm at right now through a grant, that institutions at times are set up to do a thing, their charge. But because of hierarchy, because of special interest, because of a lot of different things, they may not even get to that thing that they're supposed to be doing. I'm not accusing the Schomburg or NYU of this, but I see how sometimes rules and regulations that aren't really thought through can really hamper an institution's mission statement or mission period. And so, yeah, those are things I guess I'm thinking about. And that's all I have. Take care.
This is C. Travis Webb, and this is my note on last week's podcast. You know, we talked a lot about being disillusioned with institutions and where our original faith in institutions comes from. And, you know, for me, I believe I said this, but it's certainly true, whether I did or didn't, that my previous faith in institution comes from my basic faith in people and human beings, and that I, you know, tend to just think the best of people, not in some kind of idealized way. I mean that with all of their flaws and shortcomings, of course, as well, because I'm intimately aware of my own. And I'm traveling this week, so, you know, I didn't have as much time to think about last week's discussion. But that was, you know, vindicated for me, or vindicated is the wrong word. That was reinforced for me in the last few days. I've been traveling through the South, the American South, and, you know, I've been to, my dad's from Arkansas, so I've been to Arkansas a bunch, and Louisiana, and et cetera, but had not been to Kentucky before, and have been to parts of Tennessee, but haven't seen a lot of the state. And, you know, I was reminded, for example, that Kentucky stayed neutral during, I mean, not that I didn't know this, you know, before, but, you know, you don't always have ready at hand the things that you've learned in your life, that Kentucky stayed neutral during the Civil War because of its large African-American population. No doubt there were many Kentuckians that wanted to see black people enslaved, but there were enough that it was a non-starter, that entering the South on the side of the, entering the war on the side of the South wasn't going to fly here. It's a complicated country, right? And right now there are institutional forces that are absolutely focused on simplifying the country. They're focused on simplifying its history. They're focused on simplifying its recent past, and they're focused on simplifying its present, and they're focused on simplifying its future. And these are institutional interests. There have always been individuals, there have always been motivated ideological groups that want to cast the United States in one particular light or another, and undoubtedly our history is very dark and filled with endless is the wrong number, but is the wrong adjective, but with certainly a boatload of things to feel shame about. And it's not like those things just disappeared. I was just, you know, we talked about redlining a little bit, and I had just read coincidentally a few days after that about, you know, an instance of redlining. I believe it was in Illinois. I can't actually remember the state. You know, a black family house was appraised for far less than it was then appraised for a second time when the appraiser thought a white family was there. And maybe there were other factors, but I don't know. I mean, based on the facts that were in the story, it seems pretty clear that there was some kind of racial bias going on there. But the country is complicated. It's not that simple. It's really not that simple. It's not, Republicans are not evil cartoon villains. Democrats are not wild-eyed zealots, you know, looking to forcefully transition the gender of your son or daughter. But there are invested institutional interests in this country right now. Media interests, bureaucratic interests, corporate interests that are focused on convincing you that that is the case. They're focused on convincing you as a citizen that the country is dark and full of terror, and that at any moment, violence can erupt. At any moment, everything that you have can be taken away. And that there are people invested in in perpetrating those things, right? Not just in some general sense that you could lose everything, because any one of us that could happen to, but that there are actually people out there lurking in the dark trying to take those things from you. And I just don't believe that story. I don't believe that story. And it's made its way into the mainstream. And so that is what's led to my disillusionment with my disillusion with institutions, because I don't buy those stories. They're reductive. They're bullshit. They're not real. And I'm reminded of that driving through the South. I mean, that's just, it's a complicated place. That's all I have for this week. So, as always, we appreciate your time, and I'll catch up with you soon.